Blog Talk Radio.
You hear sirens and semis pop. You to keep vexing Ephraim. When will the envy stop? No love for any cops. That's what got Kenny shot. Y'all drinking Henny shots. I'm investing in penny stocks. They give me props. Rapping, teaching, debating, unity, while Satan trying to weaken the nation. Cops in my community kill us with every opportunity. No justice or peace, the police get immunity. Look, rubber bullets and riot suits when they gear up, asking where the love went, cause judgment is near us. And kids rather pour up a foe and sip the syrup than learn about how the black Moors ruled in Europe. We divided by economic material schism. My people are serial victims of imperialism. I tell the truth in the booth, boy, my no lie, they love the Hebrew Israelites. After N-O-I, let's pray. I pray, Abba Naba Yahweh rise. I pray for your grace and everything that you shall provide. I pray every day that you teach me how to strive to put my trust in you, cause in you is where the power lies. My people are dead and pumped will come out of hide. I pray every day no excuses or alibis. I pray that every last one of these cowards die. I pray all of this in the name of Yahweh Shai. Can't feed the flesh, don't need the stress, so I fast and I rest instead. Cold sweats in the bath, trying to grasp as I'm set in bed. In my dream I had a twin, he stabbed me to death and fled. Visions of a pale horse and a dragon with seven heads. Vagabond, Babylon, being watched by the Lord. Can't even stop by the store, cause on my block it's a war. Jehovah Witnesses don't even knock at my door, cause they know they false doctrine will get chopped by my sword. Yeah, I'm with the lyrical or the spiritual murder play. I see some ravenous wolves leading the herd astray. My homie's mom's a tweaker, I watch him survey. I'm numb to this game and the pain, I'm an invertebrate. When the Messiah comes serve, we gon' witness the sun purge. He coming back to judge every idle and dumb word. My team always moving in silence, we unheard. The elite wanna converge on the elect and the one-third. I pray, Abba Naba Yahweh rise. I pray for your grace and everything that you shall provide. I pray every day that you teach me how to strive to put my trust in you, cause in you is where the power lies. My people are dead and pumped will come out of hide. I pray every day no excuses or alibis. I pray that every last one of these cowards die. I pray all of this in the name of Yahweh Shai.
I pray you sing to the Lord a new song. Sing praise in the assembly of the righteous. Let the saints be joyful in glory. Let them sing aloud on their beds. Let the high praise of God be on the mouths of the saints, and a two-edged sword in their hands to execute vengeance on the demonic nations and punishment on those people. Divine their kings for change.
If only I could spread my wings and fly away, I'd escape this place right away and be gone, vanished without a trace. This is where I stay. It ain't safe for kids to go out and play. No matter if it's night or day, you can be hit by a stray. So every morning when I awake, I pray for a brighter day. Don't know how much more darkness my eyes can take. Criminals populate the city, crime is at its highest rate. Growing up, I was surrounded by a lot of hate. Through the tribulations, I acknowledge that Yahweh was great. Can't wait till he sent his son to deliver us up out this place. Babylon the Great, better known as the United States. The place that was built off of oppressing an entire race. But when them tribes awake, we about this place. Every nation under the sun gonna be more shook than a violent quake. Let's get it right, Jake, so we can take our rightful place. The 12 gates reserved for us, our paradise awaits.
Shalom, 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 Babakwatsawah, which means good morning in the ancient Paleo Hebrew, man. Welcome to the show. Welcome to another edition of Sword of Truth Presents Bible Talk, sponsored by ISBHPK. I'm your host, your brother, your friend, as always, Tazapah. I want to send shouts out to our brother schools all around y'all, all around the state. Shout out to the brothers here in San Antonio, VA, Rochester, Albuquerque. Shouts out to Guatemala. Hope everybody's healthy, man. Hope everybody had a good weekend. And like I said, I can't emphasize that enough, man, that I hope everybody, I hope and pray that everybody is healthy, man, because this Abercrombie and Finch, Marion, Omicron, whatever you want to call it, man, is sweeping through households, man, everywhere. I think my rib has got a touch of it now. I know Mashaba's family, I don't know if they had that or the flu, man, but just sicknesses are just going around, man. So everybody, man, please stay up on your health, getting your immune system together. I know I've listed the COVID cocktail before. I'll list it again, but I want to say this. I want to add a couple other things that you can do on a daily as your daily regimen. Selenium, y'all. Selenium is a great supplement. Boosts your immune system. It's also known as a cancer-fighting supplement. Add that to your routine. Also, zinc. Zinc is wonderful, man. It is wonderful for building up the immune system. Also, for you brothers out there, it is great for hormone reproduction, man. Keeping your hormones together, specifically your prostate gland, man. So that's great. Also, the elderberry, which I'm sure, well, maybe you don't know, but if you don't know, elderberry is great. Start your kids on that regimen, man. Pumping it into their system on a daily, just to keep the immune system boosted, y'all. And then your teas, man. Get on your herbal teas, man. Herbal tea is good for the immune system. It's good for the digestion. And, man, get out and do some type of exercise, man. Get you some walking in. Jump you some rope. I won't recommend the bike for brothers because it's bad for the prostate. But sisters, y'all could get on the bike. Get on the elliptical. Get on the treadmill, man. Just get you an hour in or some type of cardio, man, at least 3 to 4 times a week, if nothing else. Strength training is great. I highly recommend that in addition with the cardio. But if you ain't about that life, at least get you some type of cardio in, y'all. All right, with that, man, let me get started on the news. I apologize for starting a tad bit, wee bit later than usual. So let me just go ahead and dive into it. I want to open up this article is from CNN. I know I use a variety of sources. CNN seems to be my main one, man. But let me open up with this. This is something that struck me as interesting. Golden State Warriors distanced themselves from team investor who said nobody cares about what's happening to the Yoraris. I hope I'm saying that right. So I guess these people are over in China. So this guy comes out, read the article. It says, the Golden State Warriors have distanced themselves from comments made by Chatmat Palihapitiya, a part owner who said that nobody cares about what's happening to the Uyghurs. I think that's right, man. I'm probably butchering it. He made the comments on the All In podcast on Saturday after a co-host, Jason Calacanis, brought up U.S. President Joe Biden's very strong stance on the alleged human rights abuses faced by the Uyghur minority in China. So these people are over in China. Joe Biden has spoke out against what's going on. So this guy, I guess, was asked about it or brought it up. He says, nobody cares about what's happening to the Ugaras, okay? You bring it up because you really care, and I think it's nice that you care. The rest of us don't care. This is what the dude said. He says, I'm just telling you a very hard, ugly truth. Of all the things I care about, yes, it is below my line. Co-host David Sachs said the average person would care when the topic is presented to them, but Philihapatia continued, I care about the fact that our economy could turn on a dime if China invades Taiwan. I care about climate change. I care about Americans crippling and decrepit healthcare infrastructure. But if you're asking me, do I care about a segment of a class of people in another country, not until we can take care of our own selves, will I patronize them over us. I'm sorry, prioritize them over us. The 45-year-old billionaire, the guy's a billionaire, investor also said that the concept of sustaining human rights globally is a luxury belief. A luxury belief. He said, we don't do enough domestically to actually express that view in real, tangible ways, he said. So until we actually clean up our own house, the idea that we step outside of our borders about somebody else's human rights track record is deplorable. Now, I, for one, applaud this guy for being truthful, man. He's speaking the truth that everybody, all those elites, and even this broadcast show, these people want to say the exact same thing. Man, they don't give a damn about humanity. They don't care. And this dude said something that hit home. He said, man, we need to clean up our own stuff before we want to go worried about other people. And this is what gets me about America, man. And I was listening to this segment on NPR last week. Man, I forget the brother's name. I'm going to have to go back and look for that segment. But Hispanic brothers, they were asking him about how he felt on immigration. And he said that America has caused the collapse and the infrastructure problems in these other nations. So they're the cause of it. And for them to be sending these people back to these countries to die, he said they're murderers, man. This is what the brother was talking about. He was speaking the truth. All facts. He has statistics to bring up how they destabilize governments and countries. There's nothing new. That's why I said I can agree with this dude for coming out and speaking the truth, man. Esau kills me because they always want to be the villain and the hero all in the same movie, man. And that's not possible, man. Let me get this. Now, I brought this out before, man, but I'm going to bring it out again. This is Matthew chapter 12, verse 25. Matthew chapter 12, verse 25. And Jesus knew their thoughts and said unto them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. And every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And this is where we are right now, y'all. We're witnessing the collapse of this power structure. The fourth kingdom that Daniel talked about in Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7. The same kingdom is mentioned in Revelations countless of times, man. We're actually getting the opportunity to watch these events unfold right before our eyes, man. Which should be building our belief and our faith and strength in the scriptures that they actually are real, man. Because a lot of us still think that the scriptures is just some fairy tale, or they're probably 50% accurate, 75% accurate at best, but don't believe in the full Bible, man. It's a shame, but some of us are operating like that, which brings me to my next article. Let me see if I can find it. Here we go. Once again from CNN, it says the White House moderates MLK warned us of, I'm sorry, I'm reading it all wrong. The white moderates MLK warned us about. Now listening to this, MLK supposedly warned us of some moderates, white moderates. This is the quote. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride towards freedom is not the white citizens, counselors, or the Ku Klux Klan Klanners, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice. In 1963, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote these words in the isolation of a Birmingham jail, where he was imprisoned for defying a court injunction to protect the city's segregation ordinance, and an open letter initially scrawled in the margins of the newspaper, Dr. King addresses a group of fellow clergymen who claim to support the Black Freedom Movement but criticize nonviolent civil disobedience as a tactic to confront the evils of segregation. Now, I want to get this part. He says, addressing a group of fellow clergymen. I want y'all to do some research. Look up the clergy response team. I ain't going to go into it now. I brought it out on other occasions. But the clergy response team is a group of clergymen, so-called church men, church leaders, pastors, reverends, fathers, bishops, whatever. They're a group of men that actually take government kickbacks, government money to conform their congregation to what the government is putting in place. Because they always holler about separation of church and state, but that's a non-existent topic, y'all. Church and state is one in the same. One in the same. So don't y'all be hoodwinked, bamboozled, ran amok, led astray by that terminology, clergy, because clergy has nothing to do with the Most High or the Bible. They work for the government, point blank, period. As did these fellow constituents of the late Dr. Martin Luther King. Now, for anybody that didn't know, I know that Israelites, most of us tend to lose track of these U.S. holidays. Yesterday was honoring, celebrating his birthday. They canceled most of the marches and stuff that's going on. I heard his son conducted some type of damn march somewhere in which he was trying to bring attention to the Voting Rights Act. And I don't know if y'all been paying attention to it, but it's been a lot of mumbling and fighting over the political demographics of voting in this country. They've changed some stuff. I'm not familiar with it because I don't get involved in that nonsense. But he led a march with a bunch of black folks and more likely other nationalities too. Still talking about vote. Come on, man. I scratch my head on this. As much as I hear about it and think about it, our people are still trying to march to the polls thinking that voting actually is going to do something for our people. And I always pose this question to people that vote. What has changed since we were allowed to vote under the, I think, 13th or 14th Amendment? One of them. We were allowed or given rights to vote as a people. What's changed since then? What's changed? And I pose that question to anybody that's listening. Hit me up via text, 314-482-9110. Please tell me what's changed for the better for black and brown people. Now, with that in mind, I want to get this. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 17 and verse 14. And now, like I said, man, this is a sensitive topic for black, brown people. But I don't care. I don't care about your sensitivity on this topic, man, because truth is truth, man. We always so emotionally attached to nonsense, man, to non-truths, to politics, just emotional as hell, and won't stick to the facts, man. So Deuteronomy chapter 7, 13 and verse 1, it says, thou shalt not sacrifice unto the Lord thy God any book. Matter of fact, wait a minute, I'm in the wrong chapter. Sorry, I said 13. Tripping. Deuteronomy chapter 13 and verse 1. It says, if there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and give it thee a sign or a wonder. Wait a minute, is that the right one? No, it's not. Sorry, y'all. My chicken scratch. We coming back to this one, though. So you can hold that one if you want to. Let me get Deuteronomy chapter 17 first. Let me paint the setting for this. Deuteronomy 17 and 14. It says, when thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are round about me. Now, this was given to the Israelites. Let me jump over here, man, real quick. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 1. And the word Deuteronomy means words. And that's why Deuteronomy chapter 1 says this. Stay with me, y'all. It says, these be the words which Moses spake unto all Israel on this side of Jordan. So the whole book of Deuteronomy, like I said, means words, but it was addressed, the words were addressed to the Israelites through Moses. This was Moses' farewell letter, so to speak, before he passed. So Moses is telling us, giving us the instructions that the Most High gave us. He said, I'm going to read it again, Deuteronomy 17, 14. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee and shall possess it. So when we come into our land and possess our land and shall dwell therein and shall say, I will set a king over me like as all the nations that are round about me. So if we say, okay, we want a king, just like you read in 1 Samuel when we demanded a king. Samuel was sorrowful. But the Most High is like, man, don't be mad. You ain't rejected you. They rejected me. Give them a king. But remember who this king was. It was Saul. He was a Benjamite brother from the tribe of Benjamin of our own nation, our own brethren. So we did go against the Most High, but at least we kept the king of our own nation. But what has MLK's message been politically throughout time, throughout damn decades now? It's been what? Vote. And every politician, black or brown politician that came out to him, vote, vote, you got to vote, you got to vote. And who are we voting for? Another nation. We're voting for other nations, and then people got excited, oh, Barack, first black president, first. What did, first of all, he was an African. He was an African, not black, not a so-called African-American. He was a Hamite. His father was from an African nation. I forget which one. Then he ended up getting adopted by some, I think, Filipino dude. And his mama was an Edomite, so-called white man. Anyway, my point in saying all of this is because is he couldn't identify with the black man's plight here in America. It was a foreign topic for him. So, of course, he wouldn't stand up for black people because he's never lived that life. I want us to understand that. And every president that came before him has not done anything for black people in mind or anything for black people that they had in mind or even had black people on their mind. So it says, reading on verse 15, thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shall thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother. So the reverend, who I've never seen with a Bible and any pictures, he should have read this. It says that you was not supposed to set in a stranger over your nation. Meaning what? A stranger's not going to care about your people or care about the plight of your people or the problems that your people have. They're only going to care about their people and their people's problems, not yours. This is why the black man's problems have not been addressed. They've been swept under the rug. It ain't until recently that they actually started saying, oh, we got to do something to calm these niggas down because they're marching in the streets and they're bringing an eye, a global eye, to the injustices and the brute brutality and the monsters that we are. So we got to make ourselves look good. So we got to do something for these niggas because everybody, the world is watching. It's only now that they're doing something, and just a little bit, just a little bit, to make themselves look good. But the reality of it is they've never cared about us, and this cat led and continues to lead our people into this madness, man, into this damn madness. Now, let me get this right here. This is from Amsterdam News of New York, the New Black View. The headlines read, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I fear I am integrating my people into a burning house. This is one of the comments that he made to Harry Belafonte. Let me jump down in the article, so I'm going to get the exact quote. He says, activist Harry Belafonte shared a similar moment about his friend midway through the civil rights movement. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. realized that the struggle for integration would ultimately become a struggle for economic rights. Belafonte reflected, I remember the last time we were together at my home, shortly before he was murdered. He seemed quite agitated and preoccupied, and I asked him what the problem was. According to Belafonte, King responded, I've come upon something that disturbs me deeply. We have fought hard and long for integration, as I believe we should have, and I know we will win, but I have come to believe that we are integrating into a burning house. Now, this is what he's saying. But by the time he's making this statement, man, the damn damage is done, because you've got black people by this time thinking that integration is better. Well, we never really wanted integration. Go back, y'all. Check the history books. What we wanted was to be treated fairly. Fairly. That's what we wanted. Fair and equal. Because that was the slogan before integration. Fair but equal. Meaning what? We wanted to have our own economy, our own way of doing things, and to be treated fairly. Like, we wanted to be able to go into a bank and get a loan without a high interest rate. We wanted to be able to have land and to have companies and benefit from the natural resources of our land. We wanted those things. We wanted to have our own schools and have up-to-date, state-of-the-art equipment like the white schools had. We wanted to have state-of-the-art equipment in hospitals, our own hospitals that they had. That's what we really wanted. Go back, man. Don't take my word for it. Do the research. The original March on Washington was not supposed to be peaceful, y'all. It was supposed to be militant. It was supposed to be declaring a separation from the United States government. Go back. Do the research. But King changed it into this, oh, we got to integrate. And you know what integration really is? Integration is assimilation. And there's nothing new under the sun. We've always done this. And I'm going to finish my class that I'm putting together on assimilation too. But we've always assimilated. This is what the Most High kept consistently telling us not to do. When he told us don't be as the other nations, this is what he's talking about. You being like somebody else that you ain't, you assimilating to them. But this was the message that King was bringing. And like I said, I know it's still a sensitive topic, but I remember us being down in Louisiana. Where was we at? Baton Rouge? for doing the brother Austin Sterling that got murdered, and we went down there to street teaching to teach. Because Zakiya had a small congregation down there. It didn't pan out, but most highs will. Anyway, we were down there, and we got into the, somehow, yeah, I think we were Mashaba, got into the topic of Martin Luther King, man. And you know, these people was about to rush us. Black people, black folks, in the damn ghetto. We in the hood, y'all, in the hood. At the same corner store, across the street from the corner store, the brother was murdered at. Rest his soul. These people was about to rush us for talking about MLK like we was talking about Yahweh Shai, like we was saying that Christ was the devil or something. These people was ready to stone us, man, shoot us. And matter of fact, it got so hostile that we ended up leaving. That's how damn irate these niggas was about us talking about King. And mind you, they still in the projects. But I thought King was marching for equality, for us not to be in the projects, for us not to be on welfare and food stamps, TANF. I thought that's what he was marching for. Now, we trying to show our people that what he was marching for didn't work, and it was against God, which it is. These are truth. These are facts. He even came to that conclusion. Let me read the rest of this. He says, I have come upon something that disturbs me deeply. We have fought hard and long for integration, as I believe we should have. See? He still didn't change his mind about integration, though. And I know we will win, but I have come to the belief that we are integrated into a burning house. I'm afraid that America has lost the moral vision she may have had. For this nigga to say this, I don't know if he was just ignorant to this extent, brainwashed to this extent, or he was just, I don't know. I'm afraid that America has lost the moral vision. This is from somebody that came from sharecropping and slavery, his ancestors. You said America has lost its moral vision? They never had no damn morals. They still don't. Hell, was he talking about? Moral vision. You see it yourself. You was so-called having peaceful protests, and they spraying y'all with water hose and sick of damn dogs on y'all, beating the hell out of y'all billy clubs. You talking about they got morals? Nigga, what's wrong with you? He goes on to say, and I'm afraid that even as we integrate, we are walking into a place that does not understand that this nation needs to be deeply concerned with the plight of the poor and disenfranchised. You see how he changed this up? It's what all these damn politicians do, man. Your clergy response team. He made this a non-black people issue. Listen to the terminology he's using. Deeply concerned with the plight of the poor and disenfranchised. There's poor whites, there are poor all nations, and poor disenfranchised people from all nations. He just included them. This is what we always do. This is why, and Dave Chappelle said it the best. He made a joke out of it, but these are facts. He was like, man, the Let a People movement, the LGBT movement, has gotten further than the civil rights movement ever could have gotten. He said if niggas would have knew that the LGBT movement was going to get this far, niggas would have just started putting on pumps and heels and dresses back in slavery times. Now, you say he made a joke out of it, but these are facts. But this is what we always do. We always make our issues into a blanket issue for everybody, and everybody comes on in. That's why when you see the damn Black Lives Matter crap, so-called movement, it's a bunch of damn lesbians and fags. Because we've included everybody. And they understand this is why they allow the Black Lives Movement to go on and everybody's patronizing. They got the NBA players was wearing the jerseys, was last year before last, whenever they was in the bubble doing this, standing up, getting social injustice, whoop-de-woo, whatever. they've accepted, society has accepted this because it's inclusive of the letter people. That's why. Of pedophilia, it's inclusive. It ain't because they actually care about black and brown people. They still don't care. Anyway, reading on. It says, and I'm afraid that even as we integrate, we are walking into a place that does not understand that this nation needs to be deeply concerned with the plight of the poor disenfranchised. Until we commit ourselves to ensuring that the underclass is given justice and opportunity, we will continue to perpetuate the anger and violence that tears the soul of this nation. I fear I am integrating my people into a burning house. These were his comments that he made, man, according to Harry Belafonte. You know, one thing I can respect about Malcolm, because they always pitted the two against each other. They always pitted MLK against Malcolm. And you had certain brothers and sisters that preferred Malcolm, certain brothers and sisters that preferred King. But the one thing I said about Malcolm, when Malcolm spoke, man, about us, he always put or used the terminology black, the black man, the black woman, the black community, black. He never talked about, you never heard him say nothing about no damn disenfranchised and poor people, because everybody understood he was talking about. You listen to King speak, and you're like, man, who the hell is he talking about? Yeah, we poor, we disenfranchised, but why don't you say us? Why don't you mention us by name? See, but the Most High had told us that this was going to happen, just read it out of Deuteronomy, that, you know, who we supposed to set as king. And I'm going to get that Deuteronomy 13, so y'all can hold that. But first I want to get Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9. And like I say, man, this is a touchy topic for a lot of people. But I don't care. Because like I say, man, truth is truth. The Bible says prove all things. And we definitely proven that King's message, King's belief, his ideology was against the Bible. So Romans 9 and verse 6. It says, not as though the word of God had taken an effect, for they are not all Israel, which are of Israel. And if it's your first time tuning in, man, if you are unfamiliar with what we teach historical proof that the so-called blacks, Hispanics, and Native Americans in this country are the Israelites of the Bible. But here in Romans chapter 9, verse 6, it's saying that all Israel is not of Israel. So what is Paul talking about? What does Paul mean? Let's get St. John. Let's get St. John chapter 8. Let's break this down. What is Paul talking about? So St. John chapter 8, I'm going to start at verse 37. And it reads, it says, I know that ye are Abraham's seed. So he's clearly here talking to who? Israelites that came from the stock of Abraham. He says, I know that ye are Abraham's seed, but ye seek to kill me because my words had no place in you. He's talking to the Pharisees here. He said, I speak that which I have seen with my father. Matter of fact, yeah, let me keep reading. And ye do that which ye have seen with your father. So here he's clearly letting these Pharisees know that they have different fathers. But he said they came from Abraham. So he's not talking about physical. He's not talking about genetically. He's talking about spiritually. I'm going to prove it. Watch this. He says, they answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. Meaning they come from the stock of Abraham. Jesus said unto them, if ye were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. So he's telling like, man, no, if you had the spirit of Abraham, you'd be operating spiritually the same way Abraham operated. Verse 40. But now you seek to kill me, a man that had told you the truth, which I have heard of God, and did not Abraham? I'm sorry, heard of God, this did not Abraham. Meaning y'all ain't operating the way Abraham operated. Verse 41. Ye do the deeds of your father. Then said they to him, we be not born of fornication, we have one Father, even God. So now they're saying, okay, God is our Father. He's our spiritual Father or our heavenly Father. Verse 42, Jesus said unto them, if God were your Father, ye would love me. For I proceed forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Verse 43, why do ye not understand my speech? Even because ye cannot hear my words. Now, this is the part I want to get to, verse 44. Ye are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. So Christ is clearly telling them who their spiritual father is right here. You're from the devil, man. You got nothing to do with the God of heaven, the God of the Bible. You're doing your own will, not his. And I bring this out to say that even though MLK was an Israelite, he had his own agenda. He had his own agenda. He rolled in the spirit of his father, the devil, which means the deceiver. The word devil means deceiver. And then he's also known as Satan, and the word Satan means adversary. He was a deceiver because he deceived many black and brown folks to believe that they could be treated equally in this country, to believe that voting actually was going to do them some justice. Now, I'll go back and do the research. Before integration, we had communities that were thriving, segregated communities. Go back and look at Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it wasn't just Tulsa. You had communities like Tulsa all around the U.S. Quarter Zab just did a class on it, what, a couple weeks back, man. And he had all the statistical facts. Y'all can check it out on YouTube. I forget the name of the class. But it's under ISBHPK Houston. I forgot the name of the brother's class. It was a great class. But he brought out the fact that we were thriving communities when we were segregated. Once we integrated, what happened? We declined. We became dumber as a people. We became moralists. We became insensitive. This is when you start hearing about the single-parent households, even that much more, because why? We crossed over the tracks, y'all. When we were segregated, we actually loved and cared for one another. We had moral values. But what happened? We got around our red counterparts, who we loosely referred to as white, and they corrupted us. Look at it, man. You remember back when only damn sailors and people that had went to prison had got tattoos, and it was pretty much white folks. But look at us now. All these black folks walk around with damn tattoos on their face now? Who introduced this madness to us? Like I said, this was part of integration. The whole damn liberal rights, the feminist movement, who introduced that to our sisters? So now they run around with pants on, and not just pants on their body. I'm talking about authority in their mind, in their spirit. This is why so many fights that goes on in the household today. Because women are fighting to wear the pants or be the authority in the household. But where did that come from? Because remember, shortly after the Civil Rights Movement came the Women's Liberation Movement. Part of the same, man. They ushered it right in afterwards. Now, like I said, this power struggle is still going on to this day. Women want to wear the pants in the family, make all the decisions. Think everything's 50-50, walking around with them hyphenated last names when they marry. What kind of nonsense is that? Back to my point. Even though King came from the stock of Abraham, his spirit was not so. Now let's just St. John chapter 1. I'm going to keep explaining this, what Christ was talking about in St. John chapter 8. So we're going to stay in the book of John, chapter 1. We're going to read verse 11. It says, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. Now, this is the scripture that a lot of people like to try to use to say that Israel rejected Christ. All Israel rejected Christ, and Christ had to go and teach the Gentiles. It's nonsense. Do some research. It says, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. verse 12, but as many as received him, to them gave he power. Now, when it says as many as received him, as many as who? As many as the Israelites that he came to. So not all of Israel rejected Christ. To them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believed on his name. So if you believe on the name of Jesus Christ, his Hebrew name being Yahweh Shai, then you're counted as a son of God. So this is what Yahweh Shai of Christ is telling the Pharisees, man, y'all don't even believe on me. So you can't be a son of the Most High. You of your father, the devil. That's the spirit that you're rolling in. Now let's get Matthew chapter 15, and I'm going to jump around a little bit. Y'all got a couple more minutes before I get into the topic, y'all. So Matthew chapter 15, and what verse I want to start at? Verse 1. Then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, so these scribes and Pharisees were Israelites. So they came to Christ, and they always was asking him questions and starting stuff with Christ. They asked him, why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread. So he asked them a question, man. Why they don't do and roll the way the scribes and the Pharisees roll? Oh, thank you. Here it is. Quattrostop's class was called Destruction of the Black Nucleus Family. There are three parts to it. Yeah. Part one, and was it part one? See the part one and part two where he goes into the statistics about us, our segregation, and how we had those flourishing communities. Anyway, back to my point. The water lobby after that. So where was I at? It says, okay, so they're coming at Christ about traditions, right? Verse 3. But he answered and said unto them, why do ye also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? And what was King doing? He was transgressing the commandment of the Most High by what? The tradition that he was accustomed to. What was in his mind, what he wanted to do, man. No different than these scribes and Pharisees, man. If Christ was alive this day and age, you know what would be his main criticizers, his main proponents? It would be your black church leaders, your black clergy. Because he would be telling them that they're doing an injustice to their people and telling them the same thing he told the scribes and the Pharisees about their tradition and telling them that they was of their father, the devil. The same thing would be going on because they're really not for their people. Anyway, reading on verse 3? All right, let me jump to verse 7 now. He says, ye hypocrites. This is what he called the scribes and the Pharisees. Ye hypocrites. Well did Elijah, prophesies of you, saying, this people draw nigh unto me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Meaning the heart is talking about the mind. It says, but in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. In vain. Meaning you claim that you worship the Most High. MLK, for as many times you've seen him, did you ever see him with a Bible? But yet he's the Reverend Doctor, Martin Luther King. Never seen him with a doctor or a Bible. He was teaching his own doctrine about what? Integration. Because when you go back and you look at the Most High, when the Most High dealt with the Israelites, he kept telling them not to integrate, not to deal with the other nations. You can go back to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 32, I think it is. It said he separated the sons of Adam. Go back to the Tower of Babel. What was the fuss about? What was the commotion about? Because all the people during that time wanted to be one. And the Most High told them, no, y'all spread out. Spread out throughout the land. Go different places. But they wanted to be what? Integrated, all the same people. It's no different now than America's the great melting pot. That's how you know it's Babylon. I'm going to get to that in the class too, which means great confusion. You got all these nations and cultures and religions here in one place. And what's going on? A bunch of damn confusion. Anyway, back to the point. It says, but in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men. And he called the multitude and said unto them, hear and understand, not that which go into to the mouth defile me. Hold up, let me jump down. Where do I want to go? Let me keep reading. But that which cometh out of the mouth, this defile the man. Because remember they was talking about hand washing, right? And he tells us in Mark, he gives the same story, Mark chapter 7, where he talks about it's not what goes into a man that defiles him, but what comes out. And he's talking about out of a man's heart, which is talking about the mind, and he names a bunch of things. So verse 12, it says, then came his disciples and said unto him, knowest thou that the Pharisees were offended after they heard this saying? He said, man, don't you know the Pharisees were offended? It's like I said, like a lot of black people, man, they get offended when we talk about MLK, how he was not for his people, how he even said he led his people into a burning house. He knew this. But it was all under the guise of what? Politics, political power. That was not the message that the Most High wanted for his people. He didn't want his people doing that. Show me anywhere in the Bible where Christ formed a political party and told the people to go vote. You won't read that in the Bible because he didn't do that. He was not about that. He even told his parents, what? Can't you see I'm about my father's business? What was his father's business? His father's business was Christ, Yahweh Shai, waking up Israel, letting them know he was the Messiah and bringing them back to the Most High so they can have salvation through him and him giving up his life for his people, for the Israelites. That was his mission. That was his business. He wasn't concerned about no damn politics. I don't know what book people be reading. Like I say, man, they talk about the separation of church and state, but that's non-existent. Church and state is one and the same. Anyway, reading on, verse 12, then came his disciples and said unto him, knowest thou that the Pharisees were offended after they heard this saying? But he answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father hath not planted shall be rooted up. Every man, and then why do you think King was rooted up? Why do you think he was took out? Because he wasn't of the Most High. He came preaching a doctrine that was of his own. His dream was exactly that, his dream. It wasn't the Most High's visions or plan that he had for his own people. Verse 14. Let them alone. So what should we be doing with this supposed dream? Let them alone. You know what gets me about this whole I have a dream nonsense? I remember as a kid, if I was in school or at the house and I was supposed to be doing my homework or something important, and I just got to staring and daydreaming in the space, my parent or my teacher would tell me, "What? Hey, stop dreaming." But now We're inspiring people to dream, to fantasize about things. Dreams are not real. Dreams ain't true. But you're telling people to dream, not all based off of MLK. Oh, I have a dream. But now everybody can dream. Make your dream come true. This is why you got damn pedophiles actually, and it's coming, y'all, trying to impose legislation to have them sleep with young people only if they have the young person's consent. This is why you have acronyms now and these adjectives and nouns be changing to where you got to call a her, him, and a him, her now, because these people have dreams or thoughts in their mind that's not consistent with reality. Like Dave Chappelle's bringing on this stand-up, gender is a fact. You can't change how you were born. If you was born a man, that's how God intended you to be. You can't change that. But we're supposed to address you differently because you think that, because you dream this? That's your vision of you? That's your vision of you. But you can go to jail. You know you can go to jail for impersonating a police officer? What I thought was the police. Come on, man. Anyway, let me read on. He says, let them alone. They be blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into a ditch. And that's exactly what's happened to our people, man. Now, let me get to it, man, so I get on with the class. So let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 13 now. Deuteronomy chapter 13. Man, where I want to start at? Let's start at verse 1. It says, if there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and giveth thee a sign or a wonder, a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, right? Verse 2, and the sign or the wonder come to pass, whereof he spake unto thee, saying, let us go after other gods, which thou hast not known, and let us serve them. Mm-hmm. What was King's dream? For us to serve another God, that God being this country. And whether they put on their money and God we trust, but they don't trust in God. They trust in their money. They trust in their power. But this is the dream that King had that led us to. Verse 3, thou shalt not hearken unto the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams. For the Lord your God proveth you to know whether ye love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. So who's going to prove us? The Most High is, to see if we're going to follow his word, which is the Bible, or we're going to follow society, what society says. Verse 4, ye shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him and keep his commandments. Y'all see this? Keep his commandments and obey his voice, and ye shall serve him and cleave unto him. Not cleave unto another doctrine, to another vision, and it got nothing to do with the Most High. Verse 5, and that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has spoken to turn you away from the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage, to thrust thee out of the way which the Lord thy God commanded thee to walk in, so shall thou put the evil away from the midst of thee. So that evil had to be put away from us. The evil of that I have a dream nonsense. Little black boys and little black girls hold hands. Come on, man. Stop that. Emmett Till tried to hold the hand of a white woman. And what happened to him? Murdered. Stop it, y'all. Jeremiah 23, verse what? 25. I have heard what the prophet said that prophesied lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed. How long shall this be in the heart of the prophets that prophesy lies? Yea, they are prophets of deceit of their own heart. Man, how long is this dream, this nonsense about us being equal and this integration, how long is this going to be in our minds? Like I said, nothing has changed through voting, but every politician wants black folks to go do what? Black and brown people, go vote, y'all. And we still in the same conditions. Nothing's changed, man. All right, y'all. Let me move on now to my actual class, which is titled, and this is part 3, y'all. And it's going to go for a minute, man, because this is a lengthy topic, man. Babylon the Great, I would be like the Most High. This is part 3, and I left off last week in, Isaiah chapter 13? And what I'm proving, y'all, is I'm proving the three Babylons. You can go back and catch part 1 and part 2, but there are actually three Babylons that are mentioned in the Bible. The first Babylon is talking about ancient Babylon under Nimrod, who was the son of Ham, the grandson of Ham, son of Canaan. So that was the first Babylon. And the second Babylon was the Neo-Syrian Babylon Empire under Nebuchadnezzar. So that's the second Babylon. And then the third Babylon is the prophetic Babylon that's talked about all throughout the Bible, Isaiah chapter 13, Isaiah 14, Revelations 12, 11. I mean, all throughout the Bible, okay? But I'm proving that the Babylon that you see in Isaiah 13, 14 is not the Babylon, is not Neo-Babylon or ancient Babylon, but in fact, it is the prophetic Babylon, which is, in fact, America, which is America. So, like I said, I left off in Isaiah chapter 13. Let's see what verse I left off in. I believe it was verse 17. No, wait a minute. Oh, it might have been. No, it was 19. So let's pick back up there. It says, Isaiah 13:19, it says, "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms." I'm sorry, too, y'all. If it's your first time tuning into the show, I do about an hour of current events, news, things that's going on in the world, around the country. Then the second hour, I get into the actual topic. So we're transitioning over now. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 19. "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees, excellency, shall be as when Sodom," I'm sorry, "as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah." So it's not talking about ancient Babylon or Neo-Babylon. It's talking about the prophetic Babylon that's meant for destruction. Because like I was bringing out last class, when you see the Chaldees, it's talking about Babylon. And Babylon, daughter of Babylon, what else did it terminology is used? But all of that is the same, okay? Or daughter of the Chaldeans, daughter of Babylon, all of it is the same. It's talking about the American Empire under so-called white people, also known as Esau or Edom in the Bible, and these facts. And I was bringing out the proofs. I was pulling out historical sources. Go back and check, like I said, part one, part two out. I'm going to bring out some more sources this class also, proving that the Babylons are not one and the same, that they're different. They're different Babylons, three of them. Read it on. It says, well, verse 19 talks about the destruction of this place, the Babylon the Great, is going to be like the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, which is going to be overpowering, man, which is going to be a mighty destruction. It says, "It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelled in from generation to generation." So this new Babylon, Neo-Babylon, Babylon, I'm sorry, not Neo-Babylon, Babylon the Great is going to be destroyed forever. It says, "Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there." Talking about the Arabs. The Arabs ain't going to be setting up shop no more. They ain't going to have their quickie marts no more here in America. It says, "Neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. But the wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. And the wild beasts of the islands shall cry in the desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant places. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged," meaning the fall of this empire is close, is real close. It's not going to be prolonged. Now, I'm going to keep reading in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 1. "For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob." Now, matter of fact, let me do this real quick. So let's jump back to Isaiah chapter 13, verse 1. It says, "The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, did see." So from chapters 13 to chapter 14, we're still talking about the same place, which is Babylon. And talking about Babylon the Great. Now, let me do this also. So let's go to Isaiah chapter 15 also. I'm going to read just verse 1. The burden of Moab, because in the night of the Moabs is laid waste. So this is talking about the burden of Moab, but then the Most High is prophesying what's going to happen to the Moabites. Then in chapter 17, the burden of Damascus. Behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city. So he's talking about the judgment. When he says burden, it's talking about judgment of these places. Why is the Most High judging these places? Now remember, we're getting Babylon judgment. We're getting Moab's judgment and Damascus' judgment, okay? Ask, why is he judging these places? What did they do? So let's get Psalms chapter 83. And remember the names that we just covered. So Isaiah chapter 83 says, keep not thy silence, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still. For lo, thy enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. So it says that these people have taken up crafty. Crafty means cunning, skillful. Skillful counsel against thy people and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation. So this is why he's angry. And this is a prayer that David was sending up to God saying, come get these people, man. This is what they've done. They said, come and let us, they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel be no more in remembrance. And this is why when we say that we Israelites, people look at us crazy, because a lot of people ain't even familiar with the Israelites in the Bible. It says, for they have consulted together with one consent. They have confederate, they are confederate against thee, the tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites and Moab and the Hagarenes. So it lists Edom here. Now, remember who Edom is, y'all, and let's get this. Let's get Psalms 137, just to remind us who Edom is. Psalms 137 and verse 7. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who are to be destroyed. So who is Edom according to the Bible? Edom is the daughter of Babylon. This is the prophetic Babylon, or Babylon the Great, that the scriptures speak about. And remember, that same, those same Edomites are mentioned in Psalms 82 verse 6, the tabernacle of Edom. So this is who David is praying for the Most High to raise up against and to destroy, and to administer his judgment. Tabernacles of Edom, it says, and the Ishmaelites, which would be your Arab people, he says, of Moab, and we read about that in Isaiah also, which would be your Chinese. So I'm bringing all that out to show that these burdens are actual judgments from the Most High to these nations for what they've done to his people. Now going back to Isaiah chapter 14, verse 1. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. So this is a future prophecy. This has not happened yet. Because remember, when the Israelites left the Neo-Babylonian captivity, they were conquered by the Persian Mede Empire, and we weren't brought back to our land, and we weren't over nobody. Wasn't nobody cleaving to us. We didn't make nobody our slaves. We were slaves, but we didn't have no slaves. We were took into captivity, because remember, it was the Babylonians that took out the Assyrians, and then after the Babylonians came the Persian Mede Empire, which came in at what, 538 BC, I believe it was. So So this prophecy has not happened yet. This is a future prophecy which lets you know it ain't talking about Neo-Babylon. It's talking about the prophetic Babylon, Babylon the Great. So verse 2, and the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and handmaids. This ain't happened when we came out of the Babylonian captivity. We went right into another captivity. Reading on, and they shall take them captives whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow. This has not happened. And from thy fear, and from the hard bondage wherein thou was made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how have the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the ruler, he who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. He that ruleth the nations in anger is persecuted and none hindered. So it's letting you know the characteristics of this king of Babylon. He was going to smote the nations with a continual stroke. He was going to persecute the nations. So he was going to do all these things, right? Now I want to jump over to this right here. Now, who was the king of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, y'all? Do y'all remember? Okay, of course you don't. If you don't, or if you do, that's good. Let me get this. This is out of Wikipedia, man. Nebuchadnezzar II. And it says, Nebuchadnezzar II, Babylonian, centiform, meaning Nabu, watch over my heir, biblical Hebrew, also spelled Nebuchadnezzar II, was the second king of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, ruling from the death of his father, Nabopolassar, in 605 B.C. to his own death in 562 B.C., historically known as Nebuchadnezzar the Great. He is typically regarded as the empire's greatest king. Nebuchadnezzar remains famous for his military campaigns in the Levant. And basically the Levant is talking about the land of Israel in the Middle East. It says, or the fertile, what they call the Fertile Crescent. It says, for his construction projects in his capital, Babylon. And if you're unfamiliar with Babylonian history, Babylonian history, part of the seven wonders of the world, talking about the Babylonian garden. They had what's known as a hanging garden. So it's one of the seven, the seven wonders of the world. But this is what this king was known for. And it's going to tell you in the rest of this article. Let me read on. And for the important part he played in Jewish history. So this is what he was known for. Nebuchadnezzar remains famous for his military campaign on the Levant, for his construction project in his capital, Babylon, and for the important role he played in Jewish history. What part of our history? The captivity that we was in under the Babylonians. It says, ruling for 43 years, Nebuchadnezzar was the longest residing king of the Chaldean dynasty. So Chaldeans, Babylonians, same people, all right? Hold on for a second, yeah, I'm getting a text. Okay, let me read them. It says, at the time of his death, Nebuchadnezzar was among the most powerful rulers in the world, possibly named after his grandfather of the same name or after Nebuchadnezzar I, one of Babylon's greatest ancient warrior kings. Nebuchadnezzar II already secured renown for himself during his father's reign, leading armies in the Medo-Babylonian War against the Assyrian Empire. So we'll read this, and you say, Cetar's Pod is talking about Neo-Babylon, because it says in Isaiah chapter 14, he who smote the people in wrath with continued stroke, he that ruled the nation in anger is persecuted and none hindered. right? You might say this because of his military conquest that he's known for. But I'm going to read on to show that it ain't talking about him in Isaiah chapter 14. It says, ruling, let me see. Ancient warrior king Nebuchadnezzar II, already secure now for himself during his father's reign, leading armies in Medo-Babylonian war against the Assyrian Empire at the Battle of Carchemish in 605 BC. Nebuchadnezzar inflicted a crushing defeat on an Egyptian army led by Pharaoh Necho the second, and ensured that the Neo-Babylonian Empire would succeed the Neo-Assyrian Empire as the dominant power in the ancient Near East. Shortly after this victory, Nabopolassar died and Nebuchadnezzar became king. Despite his successful military career during his father's reign, the first third or so of Nebuchadnezzar's reign saw little to no major military achievements. Y'all see this, right? Little to none after his father died. No military achievements. And notably, a disastrous failure in an attempted invasion into Egypt. So he tried to invade Egypt and he failed. 3 years of lackluster military performance saw some of Babylon's vassals, particular in the Levant, beginning to doubt Babylon's power. So people were beginning to doubt his power. He wasn't as powerful as he was, or the emperor wasn't as powerful as it was when his daddy was still alive. It says, viewing the Neo-Babylonian Empire as a paper tiger rather than a power truly on the level of the Neo-Assyrian Empire, saying that it was weak. It was weak compared to the Assyrian Empire, which ruled before them, the empire that they had took out, remember? It says the situation grew so severe that people in Babylonia itself began disobeying the king, some going as far as to revolt against Nebuchadnezzar's rule. But in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 6, he who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. He that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted and none hindered him. It said that these people disobeyed him. They disobeyed the king. He didn't put fear in nobody, horse, would let you know it's not talking about Nebuchadnezzar in Isaiah chapter 14. Reading on, it says, after this disappointment, early period as king, Nebuchadnezzar's lurk turn in the 580s BC, Nebuchadnezzar engaged in a successful string of military actions in the Levant against the Vassal states in rebellion there, likely with the ultimate intent of curbing Egyptian influence in the region. In 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the kingdom of Judah and its capital, Jerusalem. The destruction of Jerusalem led to the Babylonian captivity as the city's population and people from the surrounding lands were deported to Babylonia. The Jews thereafter referred to Nebuchadnezzar, the greatest enemy they had faced until that point, up until that point, because we had greater enemies. It says, as a destroyer of nations, the biblical book of Jeremiah paints Nebuchadnezzar as a cruel enemy, but also as God's appointed ruler of the world and divine instrument to punish disobedience. So that part destroyed nature. See, Thomas Pye, see, it is talking about him. It's not talking about him. And I'm going to prove it. Now, it mentions also the book of Jeremiah. Now, let's jump now. Now, it says that Nebuchadnezzar, let me read that part again. The destruction of Jerusalem led to Babylon captivity as the city's population and people from the surrounding lands were deported to Babylonia. The Jews thereafter referred to Nebuchadnezzar, the greatest enemy they had faced until that point as a destroyer of nations. The biblical book of Jeremiah paints Nebuchadnezzar as a cruel enemy, but also as God's appointed ruler of the world. All right, so let's go there. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 27, y'all. Whole Isaiah, we come right back to it. So we're going to Jeremiah chapter 27 now. And where are we going to start at? Verse 1. In the beginning of the reign of Joachim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, came this word unto Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, Thus said the Lord to me, Make thee bonds of yokes, and put them upon thy neck, and send them to the king of Edom, and to the king of Moab, and to the king of the Amorites, and to the king of Tyrus, and to the king of Zidon, by the hand of the messengers which come to Jerusalem unto Zedekiah, king of Judah, and command them to say unto their masters, Thus said the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Thus shall ye say unto your masters, I have made the earth, the man and the beast that are upon the ground, by my great power, and by my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom it seemeth meet unto me. So this is what the Most High is telling Jeremiah to say. Verse 6, And now have I given all these lands unto the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. So it goes right hand in hand when we read with Wikipedia. People like to say Wikipedia is not a reliable source. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But my point in bringing this out is when you go to Isaiah chapter 14, it's talking about the burden, because remember from Isaiah chapter 13 says the burden of the Lord. By the time you get to 14, you read the rest of the judgments from the Lord to the king of Babylon. So in Jeremiah chapter 27, it says that this dude, Nebuchadnezzar, is the servant of the Lord. So how can he be the Lord's servant and the Lord's enemy all at the same time? That's not happening, y'all. That's confusion. Nebuchadnezzar was appointed to handle a certain type of business for the Most High. And we're going to find out what that is. Now, let me keep reading. Jeremiah 27, verse 6. And now have I given all these lands unto the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beast of the field have I given him also to serve him. And all nations shall serve him and his son's sons, until the very time of his land come, and then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. You see this? He was a servant to take out, like I said, a specific duty that the Most High appointed him to do, which was to bring the house of Israel into captivity for their disobedience. And let me go back to this article. So it says, the biblical book of Jeremiah paints Nebuchadnezzar as a cruel enemy, but also as God's appointed ruler of the world and a divine instrument to punish disobedience. Who was he punishing? Once again, he was punishing the Israelites. Because you read on in the book of Jeremiah, you had a prophet, I forget his name, which tried to say that Israel wasn't going to go into captivity. And then later on, the Most High actually came back and killed this dude because he was prophesying lies. Matter of fact, I got time. Let me get it. Here we go. Jeremiah chapter 29. Now, these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem unto the residue of the elders which were carried away captives, and to the priests, and to the prophets, and to all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captives from Jerusalem to Babylon. After that, Jeconiah, the king and the queen, and the eunuchs, the princes of Judah and Jerusalem, and the carpenters and the smiths were departed from Jerusalem by the hand of Eliasah, the son of Shaphan, and Gemirah, the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent unto Babylon to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, saying, Thus said the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives, whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem unto Babylon. So who caused the Babylonian captivity? The Most High did. Who did he use to orchestrate this? Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Now listen, verse 5. Build ye houses and dwell in them, and plant gardens, and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons, and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that ye may be increased there and not diminished, and seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be carried away captives, and pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof shall ye have peace. For thus said the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets and your diviners that be in the midst of you deceive you, neither hearken to your dreams, which ye cause to be dreams. For they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, said the Lord. So the Most High was saying, don't listen to the prophets. Don't listen to your thoughts about how you ain't going to be in captivity in Babylon. That's not going to happen. You're going to be in captivity because I sent you there. All right, back to this article I'm reading on Wikipedia. It says, through the destruction of Jerusalem, the capture of the rebellious Phoenician city of Tyre, and other campaigns in the Levant, Nebuchadnezzar completed the Neo-Babylonian Empire's transformation into the new great power of the ancient Near East. In addition to his military campaigns, Nebuchadnezzar is remembered as a great builder king. You hear that? He's remembered as a great builder king. But I'm going to read on. The prosperity ensured by his wars allowed Nebuchadnezzar to conduct great building projects in Babylon and elsewhere in Mesopotamia. The modern image of Babylon is largely of the city as it was after Nebuchadnezzar's projects, during which he, among other work, rebuilt many of the city's religious buildings, including the Isagiala and Itinanika. Repaired its current palace and constructed a brand new palace and beautified its ceremonial center through renovations to the city's processional street and the Ishtar Gate. As most of Nebuchadnezzar's inscriptions deal with his building projects rather than military accomplishments, he was for a time seen by historians mostly as a builder rather than a warrior. Y'all see this, right? So this ain't talking about the same king of Babylon. This ain't talking about the same Neo-Babylon at all. It's talking about Babylon the Great in chapter 14. Let me read on. Let me go back there now. Where was I at? It says, he who smote the people, I'm in verse 6, y'all. In wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted and none hindered him. So I'm in Isaiah 14, verse 7. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no fellow is come up against us. So this is a future prophecy talking about Babylon the Great, and this is what the nation is going to be saying after they fall. Verse 9, hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. When it's talking about hell, it's talking about a condition, all right? It's not actually talking about what people have in their mind, the mythical vision of hell. Let me prove that real quick. So hell is a condition, y'all. Let me, I think it's Isaiah 5. Let me see. Because I don't want us to be thinking that this is all mystical and stuff. So let's get Isaiah chapter 5, verse 13, just to break down hell being a condition. Therefore, my people were gone into captivity, because they have no knowledge, and their honorable men are famished, and their multitude dried up with thirst. Therefore, hell hath enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure, and their glory and their multitude and their pomp, and he that rejoices shall descend into it. So hell is a condition. To be in captivity, to not know your heritage, to not know where you come from, is a hellish condition. Now, let me get another one. Let me get another one that goes straight to the point. Once again, we're dealing with the topic of hell, so nobody is confused, man. So let's go to the book of Jonah. Jonah chapter 2 and verse 2. And said, I cried by reason of my affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou heard my voice. So where was Jonah crying to the Lord from? He said the belly of hell, meaning he was in the belly of a fish. But he compared it to what? To hell. I'm in hell. Hell is a condition, y'all, all right? So let's go back to Isaiah chapter 14 now. And what was that? Verse 9. Hell from beneath thee is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. So you're going to go through the condition. This king of Babylon is going to go through the condition that he put the other nations through. It says, to meet thee at thy coming, it stirred up the dead for thee. And it ain't talking about actual dead people. It's talking about people that are in like third world countries, in dire straits, in very deplorable conditions. Some people might refer to like homeless people as the walking dead or dead man walking, so on and so forth, man. But that's who it's talking about. It's talking about people in deplorable conditions, these countries. Because remember, verse 6, he smote the nations with a continual stroke. So reading on verse 9, it stirred up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. You see this? It had raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. So it's talking about all the nations that he put in those low conditions, verse 10, all they shall speak and say unto thee. So how are they dead and they talking at the same time? It don't make sense. I'm trying to tell y'all, man, this is not mythical. All they shall speak and say unto thee, or thou also become weak as we. Or if thou become like unto us, once again, how are they speaking if they dead? It's just talking about them being in a low condition. And when this king of Babylon, when the Babylon the Great falls, this is what the other nations are going to be saying, man. Man, you can become weak like us. How is it? Babylon the Great, America the Great, then falling and you become like us. You become like these, what you refer to as third world countries. Verse 11, thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy voice, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. Now, verse 12, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? All right, y'all, we got to deal with this. So people won't think that it's mythical and that Lucifer is a supposed fallen angel. All right. So let's get this first. According to the Bible, y'all, there are three heavens. Three. Let's prove it. So let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Let me see where I'm at. So we're going to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, y'all, to prove that there are three heavens, all right? 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and where I want to start at? Verse 2. I knew a man in Christ about 14 years ago. Whether in the body, I cannot tell, or whether out of the body, I cannot tell. God knew it. Such a one caught up to the third heaven. So this is Paul speaking, talking about Christ, talking about Yahweh Shai. When he seen him on the road to Damascus, he didn't know if he was in his terrestrial form or celestial form. And he said he was caught up to the third heaven. So according to the Bible, how many heavens are there? There are three heavens, y'all, okay? The first heaven you can find in Genesis chapter 1. I think it's like verse 11. It talks about the firmament, which is the sky, which is also known as heaven. The second heaven being rulership, power, and authority on the earth. That's the second heaven. Because remember, we just read in Jeremiah chapter 27 where the Most High said that he gives power, he gives authority, he gave Nebuchadnezzar all the beasts of the field, so on and so forth, y'all. He also tells that in Daniel chapter 2 about how he had gave him that power. Matter of fact, man, I didn't really want to do this because for lack of time's sake, but for edification purposes, let me get this. Let's get Daniel, y'all. Matter of fact, let me just go back to Jeremiah. Keep it simple, man. Look at Jeremiah chapter 27 again, y'all. 27 and verse 5. I have made the earth, the man and the beast that are upon the ground, by my great power and by my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom it seemeth meet unto me. This is the Most High speaking. He made all these things and he gives it to heaven. When he says meat, the word meat means proper. He says, and now I have given all these lands unto the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. You see this? This is the second heaven, y'all. It's power, rulership, and authority over the earth. Like if we were to have, let's say you as an individual, you owned the whole world. The world was yours. You would be in what? You would be in your heaven. You would be in your heaven. Pick your favorite food, your favorite activity that you love to do. And what if you were just surrounded by 24/7 and you had it all the time? You would literally be in your heaven your perception of what heaven is to you anyway. It wouldn't be everybody else's heaven, but it would be your heaven. All right, I want us to understand this just from a basic level. So there's three heavens. According to the Bible, we just got that in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 3 or 2. So the first heaven, power, rulership, authority on the earth. I'm sorry, the first heaven is the firmament, which is the sky, also known as the ozone layer. The second heaven, power, rulership, and authority over the earth. The third heaven is where the Most High and the angels dwell. And I'm going to get that just real quick. So Acts chapter 7 and verse 47. But Solomon built him a house. Howbeit the Most High dwell not in temples made with hands, meaning God does not dwell in temples. It says, as says the prophets. Where does he live at? Verse 49. Heaven is my throne, and earth is my footstool. What house will ye build me, said the Lord? What is the place of my rest? So where does God dwell at? He says that heaven is his throne, meaning he's sitting in heaven right now. This is the third heaven, where the Most High and the angels dwell. He says, and the earth is his footstool. He's got his feet on the earth. All right? So now that we've got that out the way, and I'm sorry if I went kind of fast, so I'm kind of pressed for time. I'm trying to squeeze this in. So there's three heavens according to the Bible. We went to 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 2 to prove that there's three heavens. The first heaven you can find, and I didn't get that one, but I guess I'll get that too. The first heaven is in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 6. No, verse 8. And God called the firmament heaven. So Genesis 1 and 8, and God called the firmament heaven. That's the first heaven. The second heaven, power, rulership, and authority over the earth, we went to Jeremiah 27, 1 through 7, to prove that. Third heaven is where the Most High and the angels dwell. We went to Acts chapter 7, verse 47 and 48 to prove that one. Now let's go back to Isaiah chapter 14 and verse 12. It says, how art thou fallen from heaven? Meaning, how are you fallen from power, rulership, and authority? Because remember, from verse, where were we at? The whole earth is at rest. No. It says, verse 10, all they shall speak and say unto thee, or thou also become weak as we, or thou become like unto us. These are the other nations that it's talking about, because this dude had power, rulership, and authority over the earth, but this is talking about his fall from that power in verse 12, y'all, okay? So it's not mythical. So I'm going to read it again, verse 12. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? Okay? So we got that as three heavens. And now we know which heaven we're dealing with, the second one, power, rulership, and authority over the earth. Now, let's get Lucifer. So we can take this out of the equation so you don't think this is mythical. It ain't talking about no fallen angel, no nonsense like that. I know what you've heard, but that's not true. So Wikipedia again. It says Lucifer. This article is about the mythological, y'all hear this, right? Mythological. It's a myth. It's not true. And religious figure. For other uses, see Lucifer. Right. So Lucifer is one of various figures in folklore associated with the planet Venus. Folklore. You see this, y'all? Nothing's real. Originally stemming from a son of the personified dawn, the goddess Aurora in Roman mythology. Mythology, not true. The entity's name was subsequently absorbed into Christianity as a name for the devil. Y'all see this? Now, keeping in mind, the word devil means deceiver. Modern scholarship generally translate the term in the relevant Bible passage where the ancient Greek figure's name was historically used, Isaiah 14:12, as morning star or shining one, rather than as a proper noun, Lucifer. Hope everybody sees this. So that word Lucifer means morning star or shining one. It also means light bringer or light bearer. I'm going to read on just to show you. As a name for the devil in Christian theology, the more common meaning in English, Lucifer, is the rendering of the Hebrew word Heli, pronounced Heli in Isaiah, given in the King James Version of the Bible. The translators of this version took the word from the Latin Vulgate, which translated by the Latin word Lucifer, uncapitalized, meaning the morning star, the planet Venus, or as an adjective, light bringer or light bearer. And light represents wisdom, y'all. Light represents wisdom. So this dude is referred to as light bearer or wisdom bearer. All right? Now let's go back to Isaiah chapter 14 and verse 12. I'm going to read it again, and then we're going to couple this with another verse. It says, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground,
which did weaken the nation. Once again, Lucifer meaning light bearer, light representing wisdom. Now, just to help us out, so we won't think this is mythical, let's jump over to verse 16 in the same chapter. It says, they that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man? I'm going to pause on purpose, y'all, to let this sink in. Is this the man? Not angel, not mythological being. This is talking about an actual man, y'all. I hope everybody's seeing this. I'm going to read it again. Same chapter, Isaiah 14:16. Dealing with Lucifer. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms? Y'all see this? So going back to verse 12, how art thou fallen from heaven, meaning power, rulership, and authority, O Lucifer, or light bearer, or bearer of wisdom, son of the morning, how art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? So what did this do, Lucifer do, this man do? And remember, this man is representative of a nation, of great Babylon, talking about the king of Babylon. He weakened the nations. It says, for thou hast said in thy heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. Now this dude, this king of Babylon, talking about Babylon the Great, said that he was going to ascend into heaven. Meaning what? He was going to be out there where the Most High and the angels dwell. This is what heaven is talking about here in verse 13. He was going to be out there. And he says, above the stars of God, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. He's saying he's going to be above God's chosen people. These are the stars he's talking about. Let me prove it, y'all. Let's go to Genesis 37. Let's go to Genesis chapter 37 now. And what verse I want? Verse 8. Genesis 37, verse 8. And it reads, and his brethren said unto him. Now, this is talking about Joseph in the vision that he was having. So he described his vision. Now, watch what his brother said. And his brother said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and told his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. Talking about his mother, his father, and his brethren. But they're referred to as stars. And remember, Jacob had 12 sons, and his 12 sons make up the nation of Israel. But these are the stars that this king of Babylon is talking about. He was going to be over in Isaiah chapter 14 in verse 13. Let me keep reading in Genesis, though. Verse 10, and he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? See, this is what he's talking about in verse 9, when he said that he seen the sun and the moon, meaning his father, his mother, and his brother bowing down to him. Which this actually came to fruition when you keep reading. I'm sorry, when you read the latter parts of Genesis, it actually happened. Because remember, they migrated from Canaan. But anyway, the point is that the Israelites are the stars. All right? meaning the Jacob's 12 sons, whose name is changed to Israel, his sons are the stars that's talked about here in chapter 14 and verse 13, because remember, the Israelites are God's chosen people. He says, let me read again. For thou hast said in thy heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation, still talking about Israel, in the size of the north, meaning the north country or North America. Verse 14. I will ascend above the height of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Now, remember that Nebuchadnezzar was the servant of the Lord. We get that from Jeremiah chapter 27. But this king of Babylon, talking about Babylon the Great, is saying he's going to be like the Most High. Meaning he's going to take the Most High's place. He's going to do things that only the Most High can do. Like what, y'all? What about genetically modified foods? What about gain of function research? What about population control? Now, let me read this. This is from historicalstate.gov. This is 121 memorandum from the President's Assistant for National Security Affairs, Kissinger, to President Ford, Washington, October 16, 1975. So this is an actual letter. Henry Kissinger wrote to Foreign Affairs, White House, Washington, Action, October 16, 1975, memorandum for the President from Henry A. Kissinger. Subject, implications of worldwide population growth for U.S. Secretary and Overseas Interests. NSSM 200, directed by a study by the NSC Under Secretary Committee of the Impact of World Population Growth of U.S. Security and Overseas Interests. The study was to provide possible courses of action for the United States in dealing with population matters abroad. So this is talking about essentially population control, y'all. And I am definitely going to read the rest of this when we return next Tuesday. I'm sorry, y'all. That was the 92nd mark. So that's my time, but I want y'all to hold on to that. Because remember, this dude said he was going to ascend into heaven and he was going to be like the Most High. What group of people are trying to be God, trying to play God? It's these people. And when we come back, I'm going to deal with how they've been talking about population control even way back then in the 60s. But who created the population? Who runs the world? It's the Most High, man. It ain't them. But they trying to do it. But they are definitely trying to do it. So, y'all, that's it for the show. Thank y'all for tuning in. The water to Mashaba for hooking up the broadcast. And y'all do me a favor and tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to please tune in to Tazza Pod Tuesdays, Tazza Pod Tuesdays, Tazza Pod Tuesdays every Tuesday. So tell friends, y'all, tune in, y'all. And thank y'all for tuning in. And join me next Tuesday as I continue this topic on Babylon the Great. I will be like the Most High. But with that, y'all, I'm going to say shalom.